were hiking past the White House late one night when our eyes beheld an eerie sight. The president appeared with folks very strange, the zombies and vampires of global climate change. It's not global warming, say oil company disciples. Our math tells us it's natural weather cycles. These claims from industry heavies, let the president rest behind his own protective levees. They're doing the climate mash.
The climate mash, that is the late, great Bobby Boris Pickett. He passed away last week, and we wanted to acknowledge his late-in-life eco-epiphany because he came out with a revised version of the famous, he was a one-hit wonder, they say, but I say two-hit wonder. Monster Mash, of course, became the signature Halloween song for so many decades. But Climate Mash is what he came up with a couple of years ago, and we've been playing that on this program and just wanted to give him a nod. Never too late to wake up and get hip to what's going on with our environment. And he passed away at the age of 69, but somewhere a few years ago, he realized that there was something he wanted to sing about, and I couldn't have imagined a better way to take a famous song and put a new spin on it. So we want to just wish him a farewell, and also want to talk about something that is related to death, and that's eco-suicide. I heard someone talk about that at a conference I attended that I've spoken about quite a bit, actually, in Phoenix, Arizona. Last fall, it was the ASHE conference, and that's what campuses around the country are doing to raise awareness about sustainability in education, not only in curriculum, but actually greening campuses. And one of the speakers who really made an impression on me is Lori Pye. She's with the Foundation for Mythological Studies. She's the executive director there. She also teaches eco-psychology at UC Santa Barbara. And she spoke about our denial overall as a culture and how we relate to one another, and that how that also dictates how we relate to nature and our environment, and how we either sort of see it clearly and embrace it or deny it. So I want to welcome to the program Lori Pye.
Hi, Betsy. How are you today?
Glad we're finally having you on. It's been quite a few months since I heard you speak, and I don't remember all of it, but you made a big impression on me. I really felt that you had your finger on this denial. And of course, since last September, we've had people really start to wake up in a big way, and yet we're not quite into action fully enough to be, you know, really saying we've turned the corner. So I'd just like to hear your thoughts about, well, first of all, eco-suicide. That's certainly a very provocative concept.
It is. And maybe we can go from the graveyard to the backyard and try to explore that a little bit and see what that means, because it's a term that not everybody understands. But just very quickly, we can take two elements, one from ecology and one from psychology. The one from ecology would be parasite. And as a human species, we are basically parasites on the planet. And, of course, a parasite, by definition, is an entity that feeds off its host. So if we think of our Earth, our planet, as our host and the resources that we garner from the planet, then we are the parasite on the host. Part of that problem is, and of course, there are a lot of entities that need parasites. There's fish that need to be cleaned, and parasites clean them. And so there's good aspects to being parasitic as well. But our aspect on the planet is not so good because we're actually using more of the resources than the planet can sustain.
Something we talk about a lot here, but yeah, so interesting just as to why we don't quite see what we're doing, you know, as a collective culture in this country and then beyond.
Mm-hmm. That's where we move into the eco-suicide piece. If you tell a drug addict to just not do drugs, it doesn't compute any more than it computes with a suicidal personality to be connected and stay around, because for suicidal personality, they are disconnected, and that's the natural state. They don't see anything beyond that. So as a culture and our dealings with the planet, we're not only parasitic, but we're eco-suicidal. So we're destroying the very planet that we need for survival. And what you heard at the conference, and part of the work that a lot of us are doing, is to bring about this idea of that we're treating the planet as we actually are treating ourselves and each other. So it's very easy for us to destroy aspects of ourselves, put ourselves down, and not maybe reach our full potential. But we also do that with other people, and we do that with the planet, and it comes out in various ways, whether we destroy our rainforest, Pacific Northwest old growth forest, or the oceans, or our own neighborhood.
I have a question for you. And I was a psychology major and came to ecology late in life. But if I were in college now, I would definitely want to study eco-psychology. I find it fascinating. And really, it's some of the same, you know, characteristics, I think. I'm curious about human nature and curious about how we let human nature go the way it's going. And that's exactly where your expertise comes in. During the 80s, you know, the me generation and, you know, all that stuff, me decade, whatever, all the, you know, consumption that continues. But, you know, good times, the party, you know, atmosphere prevailed. That's when you could see people being kind of self-centered and maybe a little superficial overall, you know, generalizing, of course, just to have this kind of conversation. And then when things are so horrible, like they feel right now, not only because of climate change, but the war in Iraq, just the horrific crimes that happened just last week with the shooting on, you know, campus at Virginia Tech, it seems like we have to anesthetize ourselves, really, in a way, tune out the news because it is so disturbing. So where is it that we can actually, you know, connect? In other words, the good times, the bad times, it seems like both put us into denial, in a sense. And again, I'm generalizing, but it seems to be something to that.
I think your point is valid, and it seems to me as a human species where our greatest potential for learning is in the darker aspects of our own personality. It is in the wounds that we've suffered as human beings. It's in the wounds that we suffer as a species. So for whatever reason that is, Betsy, and I guess if any of us ever figured that out, we would have solved many of the world's problems, but for some reason we learn more about ourselves and our behaviors and our actions through those darker sides, through those shadow sides, and through those wounds. And the connection between the dark and the light, you know, if you want to use an analogy there, is that we don't always learn as much about ourselves and what's going on around us when things are good because we're so busy enjoying that moment, which we should. But then we have to also be able to explore those times that are hard to look at, those places that are hard to look at in order to learn about our behaviors.
We just have about a minute left, and we're not doing this justice, this topic, so we're going to have you back. But Foundation for Mythological Studies, give us a quick summary of what that works about. I imagine something similar.
Yeah. Well, it's basically a nonprofit organization, and we have a series of workshops and conferences. We just did a very large conference on this very topic. It was called Nature and Human Nature, Changing Perspectives. And basically, we brought scientists and mythologists and depth psychologists to the arena to explore this whole topic of eco-suicide. And you can find that on www.mythology.org.
Well, thank you so much, Lori Pye. Hopefully, we can all wake up together very soon. We're just beginning that process.
Betsy, thank you so much for having me, and I wish you good luck in the future.
And on that hopeful note, we'll close this edition of EcoTalk. See you next time.